Welcome to Dig in the Dharma, where we dig into the Buddhist Dharma and explore ways to bring these 2,500-year-old teachings into our lives. I'm Doug Smith of Doug's Dharma on YouTube and the online Dharma Institute.
And I'm John Aaron, teacher at New York Insight Meditation Center and mindfulness-based stress reduction teacher and teacher trainer and founder of Space to Meditate. Greetings, Doug. Nice to see you.
Great to see you too, John. How are you?
Well, I have my coffee. I'm ready to go.
What could be better?
Yes, exactly. And I'm doing okay. I would like to, what's been alive for me, and it mainly came, you know, so we're recording this, what, a week and a half or 2 weeks after the death of Navalny in Russia. And I was having dinner the night after that, I think, with a good friend and actually another Dharma teacher. And we were just talking about courage, you know, and even the difference between courage and bravery. But this idea of, you know, because, I mean, what comes to me is like I have, and I think it's probably the same for you. I mean, I've lived a relatively easy life. I've been, you know, I had a good family and, you know, I've always been supported in one way or another. And, you know, just living in this country, in the city at least, you know, there's a certain level of security that we seem to think we have anyway. And, you know, when really faced with something that's, and hopefully we won't be, but when really faced with something that is, that needs to be challenged in a big way, would I have the courage to do it? Mm. Where does courage play a role in my own practice? Where does courage play a role in my life? And, you know, I mean, it's big questions, and it's questions we don't necessarily have answers to unless we're confronted with a situation. But in fact, in practice, in many ways, we are confronted. We just don't necessarily put it in that context. So, yeah, that's really what's present at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, courage is. I mean, I was when we just discussed the possibility of talking about this for today. I just don't. You know, the Buddha doesn't really talk a whole lot, to my knowledge, about courage as a virtue, as it were. I mean, in Western philosophy, in the ancient Greek philosophy, courage was sort of one of the virtues, and understood in sort of martial terms, really, anything, you know, it's sort of like the ability to do well in battle in a certain sense. Although not necessarily, I mean, of course it was a broader concept, but you know, that was the hallmark of courage is this kind of martial kind of aspect to it. Although I think, and I'm not remembering Plato well enough to go into it, but I think Plato, you know, had a very interesting sort of take on courage, which again I'm not going to remember very well, but where he sort of identifies it with wisdom,
as opposed to bravery, let's say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the true courage. I mean, in other words, there's all kinds of courage, but a lot of it is foolhardy.
Right. But that's actually the difference. Mm. In other words, at least from what I've read, and in a sense that bravery is ignoring your fear and just doing what needs to be done. And there's value to that, obviously. Courage is actually recognizing the fear, finding and acting from a place of wisdom through that fear.
Right. I mean, that's why I say true courage. I mean, in other words, there's lots of things we call courage.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of it is just sort of foolhardiness.
I mean, the word itself is related to one's heart, right? It's like, you know, what's arising from the heart in this moment that allows me to just work through that fear. And you know, many teachers, and I think it's true, you know, say that the antidote to fear is love, right? Mm-hmm. You know, which comes from a place of courage, or the love creates the courage to work through that. And so if we, in terms of specific teachings, I don't know, but there is certainly many stories where just the fact that the Buddha went into, or among many, as many people did back then, chose to leave the comforts of his life and become a mendicant, and just, you know, wander through the forest seeking truth and teachers, etc. That took a certain amount of courage.
Yeah.
And of course, others, I'm sure, did the same without the same level of courage. They just wanted to leave.
Well, yeah. Or just, you know, yeah. Did other things. But yeah, yeah. I mean, and the interesting difference there is that when we were talking about courage just a moment ago, it was about courage in the face of some calamity that's in front of us. That's temporary, you know, like Navalny, or, you know, somebody might be courageous in the face of some kind of political or other system. Whereas the Buddha's courage in this instance was just courage in front of life. You know, it's not like there was some precipitating, well, there might have been, but it's not really important that there was some precipitating event. Of course, the story is that he saw the three people, the
story,
the old man.
Yeah.
And so on. But that's really, I mean, first of all, that's, you don't find that in the early texts. In the second place, it doesn't really matter. I mean, that's not really the reason he left. He left because of dukkha. He left because of death, because, you know, the things that face all of us, which is kind of interesting. It's sort of a courage in front of the realities of the First Noble Truth, in a sense.
Yeah. You know, whether he was confronting Brahmins who, you know, just were challenging him all the time, or whether he was, you know, stopping an elephant in their path, or dealing with Angulimala, the murderer, you know, I mean, he had all these, he was showing courage in all of those moments, mm-hmm. primarily, and those, especially Angulimala, it's like, and the elephant too, I would say, I mean, if that really happened, but if any of this really happened, right? But just that moment of, And there's that famous mantra of, you know, not mantra, I'm blanking out on the word, hand movement.
Gesture or mudra, but...
Mudra, yeah.
Mudra's the later idea, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of, you know, just placing the hand in a sort of stop position to just mm-hmm. kind of wait a minute, you know, but that is done with love.
It's a not fear, not to fear, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a really inspiring place to start from. Mm-hmm. And we say that, I mean, I know when I'm introducing mindfulness to people who are not really familiar with or not really understanding the concept, we say it takes courage.
Well, yeah. I was going to say.
Courage. Yeah. You know, to just be able to turn toward our experience in the way that we're turning toward it. And the encouragement, and this has come up in our conversations around intention and meditation, actually, the encouragement is that we're turning toward whatever it is with an open heart, with a compassionate heart that allows us to be with that stuff. And when we're not doing that, we feel the difference. And so it's there.
And even feeling the fear, in other words.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I mean, because, yeah, I mean, there's the idea that, you know, if we don't have the courage, there's something wrong with us. But it's courageous just to feel the fear involved in getting started here. You know.
Yeah, and then it's like, okay, how do I bring that into my life outside of that practice? And I can't personally say that I have in any ways that, you know, one from externally would see it as a courageous act. For instance, you know, when there's a fight on the subway, have I had the courage to step in the middle of it? No. Right. And you know, that's something that isn't that atypical in New York. You know, there are confrontations throughout that you see all the time in the city. It's like people yelling at cars or people yelling at whatever. I mean, there's something always happening. And just saying stuff that isn't needed to be said. That just, you know, I've never put myself in that position, mm-hmm. right? Because of the fear of the fear to my own physical being, yeah, which is a reasonable fear. And yet the Buddha never had that issue, you know, really. I mean, why? Because he wasn't so attached to his physical being, right? Because he had achieved a level of awakening. I mean, he had achieved full awakening, so his body was almost inconsequential, except for teaching and being with the Sangha. But even in a Sangha situation, there's courage needed to confront issues to confront individuals who are not putting forth in the way that they're expected to be, you know, all of that. And yet, can we do it in a way that is coming from the heart as opposed to just one of annoyance, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think this also brings up the difference between being courageous and being violent.
Of course, yeah.
Because, I mean, as I was saying, in sort of in a more classical Greek culture, there is a much closer relationship between the two, that courage is something that happens in a martial context, generally speaking. That's the hallmark of courage, really, is what you do in battle. Whereas, of course, the Buddha was pretty relentlessly a pacifist. I don't know of anywhere where the Buddha recommended violence of any kind, frankly. So, you know, for the Buddha, the idea of courage would have been very different. It's a courage over yourself. I mean, that's, in fact, one of the things he says is that, you know, the greatest battle is one that you win over yourself. I think that's in the Dhammapada, if I'm not wrong.
Right. That's true.
And so it's, you know, it's sort of like a different... There's also the sutta where he talks, you know, the sutta on the two-handled saw, the very famous, which we've discussed before, the idea that, you know, even if somebody is, you know, just cutting you to pieces, I mean, it's a very, very strong, strong example he gives, that you should, you know, you should continue with a mind of loving kindness.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, of course... For most of us or all of us listening is going to be too tall of an order.
Yeah.
But I mean, certainly it would take a kind of a courage to do that, a courage not to fight back. I mean, of course, he's not saying you shouldn't fight back in the sense of, you know, protecting yourself. There's nothing wrong with that. But in the sense of not fighting back mentally by getting into hatred, which is the which is the place that your mind normally goes. And in fact, which gives you quote-unquote courage. I mean, I think for most of us, what do they talk about, you know, sort of taking a glass of rum as being sort of, what is it, something kind of courage, you know, taking courage, you know, like the sort of thing that the pirates would do on the ship, you know, it's kind of, you know, courage in a bottle kind of thing.
Oh,
you know?
I see. Okay. Yeah, right. Yes.
Of course, not courage.
Yourself. Right.
Yeah, it's not real courage. It's foolhardiness. But the point is that, you know, we can get ourselves over certain kinds of very scary things by distracting the mind with hatred or anger or different kinds of substances that we can take. Of course, people did take drugs.
Yeah, of course.
And do now in warfare to get themselves sort of quote-unquote courageous. But that's not real courage.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of what, I mean, most of the fear, of course, maybe even all of the fear, is arising from the unknown, is arising from, or the stories that we think are going to happen to us if we step forward.
Yeah.
And this can, of course, happen in personal relationships all the time. It's like, I don't want to tell this person this because, you know, I'm afraid of the response.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also, I think, aversion to pain, to suffering on our own part, you know, that we just don't want to get hurt, you know.
And aversion to, obviously, aversion to conflict.
Which involves hatred or anger or pain.
Well, it can. Yeah.
It can.
And, you know, so in that instance, for instance, of the fear of stepping between two people in conflict, right? The fear is that they will hurt me if I do that.
Right.
Right. And even though I have no idea if that's true, what's the acronym for when fear, false evidence appearing real? So that's fear, right? It's like there's just this assumption. I mean, there are other acronyms but I can't repeat on a family show, but not that this is a family show, but still, you know, that's the best one, I think. It's just like, I'm afraid of something because I don't know what the results are going to be. Mm-hmm. But I'm assuming they'll be bad, right? So, but I have no evidence for that, except that the tension that's I would be stepping in the midst of. But when we look at the, you know, politics and you know, kind of was, I was just watching an interview that Stephen Colbert was having with, of all people, Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? Who's, you know, the epitome of the strong guy, right? And And, you know, we forget that he was governor of California for a while. He was a Republican, but he was a very liberal Republican in many ways. But he was just, you know, talking about how pathetic politicians are now, you know, because they don't have the fear of, they don't have fear of anything but losing their seat, right?
Yeah. You say that some of them don't have any courage, I would say. I
mean, oh, absolutely. Like, most of them don't, you know, it's all coming from the wrong place. And I mean, it's not only in this country, right? Yeah. And then we forget, I mean, of course, it's easy to talk about people like Navalny, I mean, or, you know, Martin Luther King or any sort of major figure. But then there are all these small acts of courage that we often forget about or don't even see. And I think it's important in a way for, I'll say it for me, I mean, it's important for me to kind of reflect on those moments when I have been courageous without thinking about it in those terms and looking at what were the conditions that allowed me to be that way.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, mindfulness also comes into play. It's like, oh yeah, I do have this capacity. You know, I just need to remind myself of it.
Yeah. On that same note, I think I just want to, you know, come back to this idea that courage isn't necessarily something violent, you know.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, not at all.
So I think some people will confuse the two and say, you know, if I'm not, you know, in order to be courageous, I've got to be doing something that's violent or physically harmful in some
way. Right, right.
And that's not really true, or certainly not necessarily true.
Yeah. And then, you know, then there are the situations like, well, would I run into a burning building to save a life or even to save a dog? Probably. But I'm not sure that that's courage. That's more like bravery. It's like just like pushing through, like ignoring the fear and just going right and doing it. And that's a very, there's something different about that. Although maybe that is, I mean, that's a fine line, I suppose, because, you know, there's the wisdom that, yes, this life is important to save, even at my own peril, you know, just kind of recognizing that. But then why wouldn't I do it in other situations? So it's, yeah, it's really, I think it's a really important reflection and an important thing to kind of look at. And it's when somebody like Navalny dies that it kind of comes up and it's like, oh, yeah. And then I was, it's funny, I was reading it's written as a poem, but I'm not sure it is a poem by Thomas Merton. And it's a fairly well-known poem called Courageous Rest, right? And that we have this fear of resting. We have this fear of stopping. And this comes up in meditation all the time. It's like, well, wait a minute. I can't take these 30 minutes to just not do.
Ah, yeah.
Right. I can't take this. It's like, I can't give myself the gift of rest or give myself the gift of stillness because something won't get done if I do that. And I'm afraid that if that doesn't get done, this won't get done. You know, it's like, it all adds up. And so it's like, there is a courage in that. And recognizing that is, I think, really important.
Yeah, I mean, it's courageous, I think, just to take time for ourselves and face what it is that we're, you know, that concerns us on a daily basis. I mean, again, coming back to the Buddha's own life story, you know, it wasn't like there was some burning house that he was running out of, except that the burning house was all of dukkha. It's something that's existential rather than something that's temporal.
Yeah, and it would have been easy for him to just not do that, to just enjoy the pleasures of his life. Although his dad probably would have sent him out into battle, who knows, but at some point. And one of the other stories, and I'm not going to get this quite right, is that, you know, there was a conflict going on, and he was trying to neutralize the conflict and by not taking a side. Rather than take a side, he decided to leave because that was the honorable thing to do. And it wouldn't affect his, if he had taken the wrong side, it would have affected his wife and kid, you know. But by leaving and just by becoming the mendicant, you know, he not only, you know, served the purpose of neutralizing, making it safe for his wife and child, he also then allowed himself, you know, then he could turn toward what he really wanted to do, which was to find the end of dukkha. And there's something courageous in that as well, as opposed to just taking the side, a side, because it seems like the right thing to do.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, sometimes being courageous means turning away from something.
Yeah. So it's a big topic, and I think really just worth reflection.
Yeah. It's one way that we can gain energy. I mean, one of the key parts of the path is generating energy in order to practice, to go through with the practice, the meditation practice, and the practice in our ordinary lives. And having that kind of courage gives us energy.
Yeah.
If we can find it.
Yeah. No, it's true.
But wisdom is so important, though, in all of this, and having the wisdom to know what's, you know, I mean, because you don't, I mean, in every circumstance and difficult circumstances, and this is one of my issues, is how do I intervene and not make things worse? Or should I not intervene? And by not intervening, maybe that makes things better, you know? In other words, it's trying to see a situation and trying to be as wise as possible about how, when you have limited information, you don't know what to do. Sometimes when those things come up in front of you, you really don't know what to do. And you don't know if, you know, one way of thinking of it is, oh, if I intervene, let's say if something's happening on the subway or whatever, I could certainly make things better by, you know, putting my body in between these two people, but maybe that would make things worse. I mean, I don't really know.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. I'm bringing in another television show. Sorry. There's a show I've been turned on to. Maybe it's because of potentially moving to Chicago, this show called The Bear, which is about a family in Chicago that has a restaurant. And complicated story. It's a really, really good show, I have to say. Very beautifully written and great characters. But this one young African-American woman who's an aspiring chef, you know, there's a big argument happening outside the restaurant, which is getting, you know, causing problems in terms of their own patrons. And she, you know, the two big guys are like just having it out, not fighting yet physically, but just arguing with each other. And she just steps in and she says, just stop, you know, and they keep like trying to go and she does it, you know, and it's like the courage to do that. And, you know, maybe it's different, you know, because, you know, they weren't going to hurt a young woman. Right. Whereas if another guy, her, you know, their size had come in and tried to do that, it would have been a different response perhaps. Although a lot of it just depends on what's happening. So it's like, how do you intervene and not create more of a problem? And some of it is just allowing people to speak, you know, but the other forcing the other person to listen, you know, and just seeing how that plays out. And, you know, one of these days, maybe I'll just try it and see what happens. I just have never had the courage to do it. Mm. And yet I, you know, it's a practice, and it's really why we practice in a sense, to be able to see beyond the immediate that's here and recognize, not that you know beyond that, but at least recognize that there is something else behind all of whatever we're seeing in terms of causes and conditions that we don't know. And that, at least for me, it allows some degree of compassion to arise for those people that are really challenging, because I don't know, but I know that there's something, but I don't know what that is, and I never necessarily will. But I can assume that if somebody's, you know, really hot under the collar for whatever reason, there's a lot of causes and conditions for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I think in that case, intervening in a way that's helpful requires a lot of situational awareness, I'll put it that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And,
that's something that I personally don't feel like I would have. But I know some people are really good at it, who are really good at sort of improvising in the situation and knowing how to sort of improvise in ways that tone things down.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the things about getting into debates, disputes, arguments.
Mm.
I mean, not, you know, of course, this is not so physically dangerous, but does happen online a lot, for example, or with other people, coming to an awareness of when and how to intervene in ways that, or at least to add something to the discussion so that it's not, so that it doesn't devolve into anger, or to get out of a discussion that is becoming angry in order to not perpetuate it. I mean, I'm just reflecting on some issues online that I've seen recently with people, you know, whose way of interacting with others intentionally provokes them, and how to deal with that or not deal with it. In other words, sometimes the best way to deal with somebody like that is, as they say, you know, don't feed trolls.
Right.
Is, you know, in a certain sense, the courage is not to respond or not to get involved.
Yep.
Because it's just going to make things worse.
For sure.
Even though you have things to say, you just sort of say, well, it's just not worth, it's not worth getting in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a tough issue. I mean, I think it is it really is a practice of courage is a practice of wisdom, and it's and wisdom is not easy.
Even the Wizard of Oz knew that.
For sure.
That's why he gave the lion a heart.
Yep.
Wasn't that the lion that got the heart? Or was it the tin can? I can't remember.
The tin man didn't have the heart, I think.
Yeah, no, he had the brain. Tin man didn't have the brain.
No, I'm sorry. It was the, you're right.
The lion he was missing courage. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was like the heart that he needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lesson to be had.
L. Frank Baum.
Yes, there you go. All right, friends, something to reflect on for you, and let us know what you think. And we've had some nice people get us a lot of coffee, actually.
Oh, good.
Lately, and we really appreciate that. So, you know, we love your support, and you can do that by going to digginthedharma.com and also leaving a comment or two. What does it take for you to be courageous? How have you been courageous? Have you noticed a shift since you maybe have started practicing, et cetera? Yeah, however this hits you.
Yeah, what does courage mean to you?
Yeah, so good luck. Bon courage, as they say.
As they say in French, yes.
Yeah. All right, Doug, until next time.
Great to talk with you, John.
Be well. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on your podcast directory. And please check us out at digginthedharma.com, where you can leave a comment, buy us a coffee, and even become a member. You can find out more about me, John Aaron, at johnaaron.net, and Doug at dougsdharma.com.